Welcome to episode 2 of Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor. Today we'll be talking about Roger's big screw-up, sugar, Coca-Cola and wheat, and the latest in nutrition and exercise. Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 2. Colin, what is up?
Not a lot. Last week's been busy for me at work. Not a lot to talk about here, unfortunately, but just my big thing now, it's kind of crazy, but just reading a lot about plastic and plastics in your house and what kind of toxicity, what kind of issues and health issues that could cause. A little bit crazy, but that is there. Needless to say, I got rid of some plastic objects in my house, but I'll be posting that soon on my website, cavemandoctor.com. It's been consuming me. Otherwise, not a lot of excitement going on for me. What's up with you?
So wait, how deep does this psychosis run? Are you going to supermarkets and demanding paper bags?
I actually go to supermarkets. I bring my own bags, and I put my groceries in the bags when I grocery shop. I don't even put them in their plastic carts. So nice. Half the time they think I'm shoplifting. It's moderately psychotic, let's just say. And unfortunately, the more you read, or the more I read, the crazier it gets. But I'm going to post on it. I'm going to convince you and everyone else that maybe it would be in our best interest to avoid plastic.
I'm a little scared of what we might learn about you in episode 27. We just need to spend a little bit more time here.
We're at 2. It's only going to get worse.
All right. So, hey, let's start here before we get too much deeper in the show and thank everyone for listening to episode 1. We got a lot of great feedback last week, and it just kind of trickled in as the week went on. I know you have someone you want to shout out here.
Yeah, I got a lot of emails and comments on my website, which I appreciate. A ton of comments, actually, and some really amazing stuff. I want to thank Ben Fury, who actually critiqued our audio style, the bandwidth, etc. And he actually fixed the initial podcast for us and showed us how to do it right.
Yep.
Out of the goodness of his heart. Nice guy. Really appreciate it. What do you got for us?
You're a soft talker, man.
I'm a soft talker. He gave me some other points, some other hints as well that were right, and he said he thought the mic wasn't close enough. But
now the mic is on Colin's chin.
It is literally touching my chin, but unfortunately, I put my hand on my chin a lot when I talk, so I think that may be part of it. And I am a little nervous, not gonna lie.
We're learning.
We are learning on the job.
And I want to thank Dean Dwyer from Makeshift Happen. He was the first person that I know of, anyway, to listen to this podcast. The first person to comment on my blog about it, and he also sent me an email offline for a whole bunch of usable takeaways. So my hat's off to Dean Dwyer. Thank you for the support. All right, so I have a whole bunch of stuff to go over here on a personal note. Wednesday, we got our Philly Cow Share. So Philly Cow Share is a service that goes out to local farms and sources grass-fed, hormone, antibiotic-free meat. And we were really stoked up about it. We sourced it through, or we put it together through my studio, Relentless Fitness. And we had 8 people, actually 9 people split the cow. And it came on Wednesday. I want to give them a huge shout out because Philly Cow Share did an amazing job. Megan Bucknam is the girl's name who works for them. She came out with the butcher in their truck. They packed every single cooler with us. And it was awesome. We got an assortment of ground beef, hamburger patties, Delmonico's, fillets, osso buco, you name it, the cut was there, and it tastes great.
Still waiting for the invite for the bone broth?
Bone broth.
Well, where's my invite?
Oh, man. So the story there goes like this. I don't know if anyone out there has ever gotten a piece of a cow before, but it does take up a little bit of room, and I got a little overly ambitious. So I was chatting with Megan about, hey, how do I get my hands on some bones and organs? And she says, oh yeah, we have these boxes we can sell. I said, I want one. And then I went home and I packed the freezer with our grass-fed meat. And I realized I have no place for these bones or organs. So I backed off. I sent her an email. So in 2 weeks, I will have an answer for you.
All right.
I need to clear out some of this beef first.
I'll be waiting.
Nice.
Waiting for the invite.
That's right. Bone broth and grill out.
Nice.
Okay. So I screwed up. Now it's time to own up. Episode 1, you may recall, was talking about a gentleman named CJ Hunt in his new movie, In Search of a Perfect Human Diet. And I was all excited about bringing that movie into the studio and showing it during our first Ancestral Health 215 meetup movie night. And, well, I was wrong. So, got a little ahead of myself. CJ Hunt will be debuting, or as of actually when this podcast is released, he will have debuted In Search of a Perfect Human Diet in San Francisco this past Tuesday. So, I can't show it in a place of business. And this is my time to own up. I'm sorry, CJ. I had no intention of pirating your movie. I'm a good guy. I like to do things legally.
I would just like to say I called you out on it.
You do? So, yeah.
I'm against copyright infringement.
That is the funniest part of the story. So I think you were joking, right?
I was joking. Okay.
So if you go back to the last podcast, you'll see me, oh yeah, so stoked up, going to do this movie. CJ's a great guy. And Colin says something like, are you sure there are no copyright issues, as a joke? And of course, I blow it off, not even considering it. So get this. The next morning, I wake up to an email from CJ Hunt. He says, Roger, we have to talk. So I chatted with him on the phone that day, and he basically, he let me down softly. He said, you know, you can't show it at the studio. You can show it at a private residence. So for all those out there considering showing In Search of a Perfect Human Diet at your fitness studio, please refrain and show it privately. But so I'm embarrassed enough that I want to do something to make up for this. And CJ's in San Francisco now doing that debut. And I decided at movie night, I would bring up the possibility of campaigning to get CJ Hunt in Philadelphia. And now that I'm saying it on the podcast, I guess I have to go forward with this. So we want CJ Hunt in Philadelphia at a theater here showing In Search of the Perfect Human Diet. And so we're going to get down to campaigning for that. So as of this podcast release, we will have a Facebook page up, and we are looking to crack triple digits, a couple hundred people interested in coming out and seeing CJ. What do you think, man?
I think it's a great idea. Don't even limit it to Philly. Whatever city you're in, if he's not coming. I haven't seen it, so I don't want to push the movie, but I'm guessing I'll agree with the message, and I can't wait to see it.
Yep.
Let's get it going.
And that's the best thing about the paleo community online. It's a really tight community. I think people are really enthusiastic, and hey, let your voice be heard, right? Like you said, yeah. If you live in a city and you want this movie to come locally, I mean, what a fantastic event for a meetup group out there, right? I know we're not the only one. We're certainly not the biggest one.
So, spread the message.
Yeah, spread the message is right. Cool. So, hey, what did we do on movie night? So we sure as heck couldn't show CJ's movie. So we pulled a real quick 180 and we showed a couple different things. So we sourced Kim Mulvihill's recent segments on San Francisco CBS. So paleo made the mainstream out there, and it's all due to Kim's work. She did a sequence of, I think she did 5 segments. We watched 4 of them as of movie night. And the first one was actually on CJ Hunt himself. So they were pretty solid. So Kim, hats off to your work out there in San Francisco. And then we watched Dr. Robert Lustig's recent appearance on 60 Minutes. And he was talking about the toxicity of sugar. And Colin, I know this is a sweet spot for you. So
this is a sweet spot dear to my heart. And if I could get a minute here to step up on my soapbox, I think I'm going to
take a few minutes, man.
Thanks. Let me roll with this for a couple minutes here. So for those of you that haven't seen it, you could just Google 60 Minutes, sugar toxicity, Robert Lustig. That's Lustig. And he's been pretty outspoken about sugar and how toxic it is for quite some time now. And basically in this episode, Sanjay Gupta is involved, you know, typical interviewing people left and right. And the part that really struck a nerve, so after they start showing study after study showing that sugar is actually toxic, has a lot of health issues, which for most of my listeners out there, this is nothing new. This information's to a degree decades old. But anyway, there's more conclusive studies recently. And at one point he's interviewing a sugar farm or someone who grows sugar cane, and he really does question him a lot about his product, saying, you know, this is toxic to people as a sugar cane producer. This is what your number one product is. How do you feel about that? And, you know, I'm not necessarily criticizing this. This is a hardworking American. He's trying to make a living. And maybe he didn't, you know, when he started doing this, he didn't know the data showed this kind of message, et cetera. And so he says right away, you know, there's not a lot of great data on it, and we're not really sure. And then Sanjay Gupta comes right back at him with, you know, paper out after paper. And at this point, you know, doesn't have much of an argument. And he says, well, there's nothing wrong with a balanced diet, something along those lines. And that's, it's fitting because that's what most physicians do as well. It always comes back to this balanced diet. No one really knows what a balanced diet is.
Or quote, everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation, you know, cigarettes, alcohol, everything in moderation. No, of course not everything in moderation. Anyway, that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. But the amazing thing about this really kind of struck a nerve with me is, you know, underlying message here is everyone has an agenda, and as do Roger and I, and everyone has an agenda, and that's fine.
Dude, agenda? What's my agenda?
Our agenda is to get people more healthy and get people exercising.
Okay.
Which I think is a good agenda.
Sounds a little insidious.
Well, maybe some people don't agree with our agenda. I don't know. I think our agenda makes sense. But everyone has an agenda. And for instance, you know, I get a lot of emails on my website from animal rights activists because I push eating meat and animal products. Granted, I push what I consider ethically raised free-ranging meat with no hormones, no antibiotics, those kind of things. But nonetheless, animal rights activists message me a lot, sometimes, you know, some personal attacks in there as well. And, you know, so their underlying message here is they don't think we should kill animals. And I'm not arguing with it. They have moral issues with it. And that's great. You know, more power to them. But their underlying message is not necessarily that eating animals is unhealthy. Sometimes they say it's unhealthy because they don't want animals to be killed, and I understand, but that's their kind of hit. Their agenda is they don't want animals to be killed. This guy's agenda that Sanjay Gupta interviewed, you know, his underlying agenda is obviously to sell sugar.
Yeah.
And once again, it's not necessarily for anything to do with health, and I'm not necessarily blaming him for that. Every person doesn't have to be selling a product or doing something that's going to improve your health. And if people want to eat sugar, that's their business. I'm not saying anything should be banned or whatnot. But then really it brings up the question, who do we know to trust? What do we know what people's agendas are? And that's why I think a lot of the paleo movement is such a great thing, because the underlying agenda there is we just want to be healthier. You know, we're not these bloodthirsty savages that are, you know, opposite of the animal rights activists where we're pro just killing animals. No, if animals were unhealthy and we didn't eat them for the last 2.5 million years, I wouldn't be pushing them, and I don't think you would either. So when you see these people that have other day jobs, that are, you know, physicians, that are businessmen, that are lawyers, and then they're doing this kind of stuff on the side, coming to the ancestral health, or even Roger right here, I mean, you're in business and you do a career shift because you're so passionate about it. These are the people where their agenda is health, and that's why it's just such a great community, and it's great to get information from them. And, you know, everyone looks at the data a little bit differently. Everyone manipulates it in their own kind of way. Me as well. I mean, you can see on my website. But the underlying thing here is that we all want to be healthier. We want other people to be healthier, to be more active. And that is our agenda. And that's why I'm just really glad to be part of this movement.
It's great. It's a pure agenda. I think the movement, it's not necessarily a new movement, but it's
2.5 million year old.
That's very true. But we're just starting to expand it. The movement is just starting to grow. And I think it's new in that sense, in that there hasn't necessarily been an opportunity for a ton of money to creep into the movement. You know, usually when the popularity hits and a ton of money creeps in, then things start to get tainted a little bit. And I think this is, for the most part, a pretty pure of heart movement right now.
Yeah. And it's at the point now where I don't think it can be stopped, which is great.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a lot of these people too, these are people that did it and saw results. They had friends that did it and saw results. There's physicians out there that have had thousands of patients that have done it and saw results. So you just don't see that many people on the opposing side that tried the other diet, the conventional dietary strategies that got these great results that are out there preaching about it. Yet there's tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people that have switched to this lifestyle, and they're just, the benefits are amazing.
No doubt about it. And, you know, the Lustig piece, I think everyone should go out and watch it. There is a free link online that you can go to, and it's about a 9 or 10 minute segment. We'll try and link to it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty great because no matter what, you know, even if you are a vegan, I mean, we have our resident vegan, Jess, who is a trainer at Relentless Fitness. She had an open mind. She came to Paleo Movie Night and she saw some of these segments, and you know, she's ethically opposed to killing animals, which is fine. And it's not like tomorrow she's going to start slaughtering animals, but she did take away from this Lustig piece, hey, I need to watch my sugar intake a little bit more closely. So anyone can learn something from this.
Yep, baby steps.
Baby steps is right. Awesome. Well, hey, how about we talk about some current events? I know you pulled an article you wanted to share, and I did the same. Why don't you kick us off?
I'll kick us off because, as many of the listeners out there witnessed last week, Roger was kind of the negative, glass half empty kind of guy, and I called him on it, and I feel bad because he's a positive guy, maybe more so than me.
First impressions, man. Episode one. Now I'm cornered.
Well, we're gonna switch it back here, but I'm gonna take that role this week. And my big news story was Coca-Cola and the Choose You campaign has joined with the American Cancer Society, encouraging women to fight cancer. And this for me is just really painful to see. You know, we know that tumor cells run on glucose. We know that sugar fuels cancer. Robert Lustig's episode on 60 Minutes as well touched on this a lot.
Yep.
There's an oncologist on there from, I believe he runs Harvard Cancer Center. I could be wrong.
I think you're right. Yep.
And he doesn't eat sugar anymore because of the data. And then you have Coca-Cola, who is the purveyor of sugary products here. And I don't know if that was a proper use of the word. Purveyor,
but we'll take it, man. Just roll with it.
Nonetheless, joining with the American Cancer Society, and this is just painful to see what message is this telling people. And you know, I'm not dissing Coca-Cola here. I mean, if they can make whatever product they want, if people want to use it, that's fine. But to join with the American Cancer Society, this is just not a great message. I mean, what's next? The American Lung Society is going to join with Marlboro or whatnot. This is just it shows big business involvement, big pharma's involvement as well, on a side note, with a lot of these organizations that are kind of writing the books and for our cancer patients and our cancer treatment. And
so do you know what the origin of that was? I find that to be such a strange partnership. Was it Coca-Cola sponsoring them and making a donation and being able to pair their name?
So I researched this, and the American Cancer Society doesn't have to list anyone who donates money to them.
Okay.
I mean, you'd be foolish to think that Coca-Cola didn't make a very large endorsement. And then they're saying in this campaign, they are going to, you know, funnel a certain amount of money into the American Cancer Society to fuel cancer research, which is great that we're fueling cancer research, but.
Yeah. I mean, at what price, right? You have to think if you're the American Cancer Society, I mean, yes, obviously. To some extent, you want as much money as possible to fuel research, but man, to partner up with Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm. And they also, I mean, they have nutritional recommendations online as well for patients. And I went through all of them, and you know, it's the same. It's a high carbohydrate, low fat, same message. I'm not saying that's related at all. But you know, if you see them merging with Coca-Cola, you look at their nutritional recommendations on their website, which are very high carbohydrate during cancer treatment, which...
Oh, so that's fair then. I mean, maybe... Hey, you know, we are very steeped in paleo and steeped in what we believe is the right approach. But to hear that, yeah, I mean, American Cancer Society, if they are recommending a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet, then maybe Coca-Cola isn't, as crazy as it might sound, maybe it isn't that far off from, I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, I don't, maybe we're that crazy.
Maybe we are just that crazy.
Tunnel vision. I don't know. Anyway, this is disappointing. So I'm the negative Nancy this week.
Dude, you brought me down with, you're like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Roger looks really sad right now.
Man, I'm drained, dude.
What do you got? Cheer me back up.
Well, I can't cheer you back up. I am going to shout out Dr. Briffa, who runs a fantastic blog, and he wrote an article called Wheat, Opiate of the Masses. So Dr. Briffa apparently was on Jimmy Moore's Livin' La Vida Low Carb Cruise recently, which was a collection of, I guess, foremost low carb experts who go on a little bit of a cruise vacation. I'm sure they do some speeches and events within it. And Dr. Briffa was out there with Dr. William Davis, or Dr. Bill Davis. And Bill Davis wrote the book Wheat Belly. And in the book, he talks about three negatives of wheat. Number one, impact on blood sugar levels. Number two, impact on the gut. And number three, And this is the one I'm interested in, as well as the one Dr. Briffa was interested in, wheat's drug-like effects. So in my mind, when I talk about wheat with clients who maybe have heard about a gluten-free approach or a gluten-free lifestyle, the answer to the question why is normally blood sugar, right? Or mm-hmm. gut irritation. I don't think too many people know about or have read about its drug-like effects. You know, I think when you think of addiction and food, what do you think of? Sugar, right? What we just talked about, what Dr. Lustig had talked about on 60 Minutes. I don't know how many people are thinking about wheat and addiction. I think it's a little bit of a tougher link, but you know, apparently according to Dr. Davis and Dr. Briffa, it is legitimate. And wheat has the ability to break through the blood-brain barrier and to act like an opiate to the brain, which is scary stuff.
And you hear this a lot. This might just be from the sugar insulin, but you hear when people go to a restaurant, they bring out that bread basket.
Oh, yeah.
How many times you hear, I don't even want a piece of bread. I eat one. Next thing you know, the whole basket's empty.
Gone.
And it's happened to me in the past. I don't even touch bread because maybe it'll happen again. I don't know. I haven't had bread in a while, but this is not too crazy to think about. Plastic, maybe, yeah, this I don't know.
Fortunately, no one's directly consuming plastic.
True. Oh, maybe basket. We are. We don't even realize it. No, all right, see, that's a crazy side comment. Anyway, sorry, Roger. Back
to you
here.
So I just encourage people, you know, gluten and wheat may be a little bit more dangerous than we thought, you know. Sugar addictive, yes, but maybe wheat is too, and that may be just enough reason to steer clear of that bread basket at the restaurant.
Just another reason where if it's like an opioid, we know that it's beyond our control. If you put that in your mouth, if you eat it,
yes.
you get it in your blood, it's going to make you crazy and it's going to make you want more.
And hey, that's an empowering realization, right?
It's out of your control.
Yes, exactly. So that's an empowering realization. If you can come to the conclusion that it is out of your control, maybe you'd be more comfortable not consuming it. Right?
Yeah.
If you think it's in your control, then it's, oh, well, let me just eat that first piece of bread out of this basket. I'll eat one and then I'll push the basket aside and I'll wait for my entree. Right? But it doesn't always work like that. If you kind of get the sense before you even touch it that, hey, if I go down that road, I'm having an opiate-like effect on my brain, maybe you don't even need that first piece of bread.
Yeah. This is powerful stuff here.
No doubt.
I got to go on a tangent here. This actually just made me think. I'll post this on the website link.
Yep.
Or I'll Twitter it too. There's actually an article. It's like plastic. It's a little crazy, but I think it was this psychiatrist and an anthropologist. I could be wrong. They actually wrote about this, about the opioid effect of gliadin and wheat.
Uh-huh.
And their theory was that that's what partially led to civilization, because people are meant to kind of be on their own domain, in their own cave, with their family spread out.
Yep.
And really the way cities are now with everyone crowded, that it's the human mentality just doesn't let that happen. So his theory was because everyone was eating bread, there was opiates in it, and it was kind of pacifying the masses, where you could crowd them in these apartment structures and they didn't end up going nuts.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, it's out there, but
I'm not going to say I support that theory, but it does make you think, right? I have had countless cases, and I'm going to refer to one, of transformers who come in, and Relentless Transformers, that's the program I run, where we try to clean things up for a period of 8 weeks and make a lot of progress, right? I've had countless people come in and they're used to eating the sad standard American diet, and they flip over to a paleo-like approach. They cut some of the sugars, or hopefully all the sugars. They cut the wheat out. And to say that when they leave, they're empowered would be an understatement. You see them standing taller, more confident. And I have this one story, a lady who did a transformation almost 2 years ago. And she lived out of town. She drove about an hour in and an hour out for her sessions. So I have no idea why she put that much faith in me to begin with, but I hope I earned it by the end. But several weeks into the transformation, when she had cleaned out wheat and sugar and she had dropped her allergies, which is crazy. Allergies that had afflicted her since she was a kid.
Wow.
They were gone as of the first week. And a couple weeks in, she started her business. It spurred her to rent out of space, transfer her online business into a physical space. And it was nuts. Hmm. And she had said towards the end of the transformation, I don't know that I would have done that. You know, I don't know that that's something that I would have done had I not altered the way I was eating and the way I was moving. And that's crazy to think about, you know?
Absolutely.
How much untapped potential do a lot of people have, but they're just being bogged down by, you know, a donut for breakfast or a bagel or cake or whatever, Coca-Cola or whatever it may be, right? How much is that food and drink choice impeding them from taking the next step in their life?
I like it. I like it. Let's look at it this way. It's out of our control. If you eat a piece of bread, you're going to want to eat more.
Yep.
It's tapping on your brain like a drug. So just avoid it by all means. I am going to list that article that I mentioned because I think it's interesting. I think it's going to blow your mind, Roger.
Please do. And hey, I want to tease this. I'm not going to talk about it today. It's a little bit out of scope, but I have a big expose coming on the concept of the treat meal. And that has lots to do with sugar and bread and
I can't wait.
Sorts of stuff.
We started to debunk the cheat meal at the Ancestral 215 meeting on Friday.
Yep. And now I want to offer my personal experience with it. So you can look forward to that in an episode coming soon.
Look forward to it.
Great. Well, hey, there are some current events. How about we give the listeners some takeaways?
You want to start us off here?
Let's do this. So let's talk nutrition first. My nutrition takeaway is this. When I'm eating clean, I know that I have a tendency to undereat. Less calorically dense foods. And I have a tendency to eat two large meals in a day. Doesn't leave a lot of room for snacking just because of my schedule. So I know that if I don't pack those meals, I'm not going to be getting enough. And I'm going to be running at a caloric deficit, which of course could lead to some sort of a crash or a binge. You know, it could perpetuate binging behavior. You run too much of a deficit for too long, your brain's going to go nuts. So my emphasis right now is on making sure that I get enough fat. And I've also told this to a few people asking me questions about, hey, I'm hungry, what do I do? And the answer is always eat. I'm not a big you have to go hungry to get results guy. I believe you can be completely satisfied and still get the physical results you want. So I say eat, and good fat might be the way to go. I know it is for me. This week in particular, I'm focused on macadamia nuts and coconut butter. They're pretty easy for me. Macadamia nuts are easy to pop at the end of a meal or a portable snack. Coconut butter, I like, and other recommendations I've given out. Guacamole, as long as you know the ingredients, obviously. Baked kale chips with generous application of, I know you like avocado oil.
Love
right?
Love it.
Yeah. Or the oil of your choice. And so again, macadamia nuts, coconut butter, guacamole, baked kale chips with generous oil, just a few ways to get some good fat in there and increase your satiety.
Yeah. And for all the listeners out there, you know, keep in mind when you're cutting the carbs, which a lot of you are doing is great, you got to add something and you got to add fat. Protein's not going to do it. You're going to not get the energy you could get from fat. We know our body prefers fat, a lot of saturated fat too. And we have studies where we put our muscle cells from our heart, our myocytes, we give them fat versus carbs. They need the fat. Our body requires it. So you got to get that fat up. And my takeaway along these lines is actually a recipe. I'm all about quick, easy meals.
Yep.
Get some okra, wash it off, put it in vinegar, whatever you do to clean it.
Yep.
Cut it up small pieces, salt, pepper, macadamia nut oil. You can't use enough. The stuff's amazing. I believe
you've been quoted as saying you could drink it.
I could drink macadamia nut oil. It is so amazing. Okra, you're getting good fiber in there. And that's just one of these simple ways to get your fat up. You know, you're eating a shrimp, salmon, piece of meat, whatever you want. A lot of protein in there, some good fat as well. This is a way to get really tip the scales on your fat. And it's absolutely delicious. I could eat it 3 times a day for the rest of my life.
Nice. So let's see if we can give a little takeaway here on macronutrients. So, right, fat, carbohydrate, protein. Standard American diet, right? Low fat, moderate protein, high carb.
I'd say fairly
accurate. So we propose that's broken, right?
Very broken.
Very broken, right? So low fat, moderate protein, high carb, broken. But like Colin was saying, if you take something out, you have to replace it. So if you go low carb, high protein, low to moderate fat, also broken, right?
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
Not going to feel good.
Not going to work. So if you are adopting this, and I believe that a lot of people are going about this thing that way.
Absolutely.
I think that when someone says, okay, I get it. I get it. Paleo sounds great. I want to go that route. I think the natural aversion is to fat, right? We've been taught all our lives that fat's bad for us, right? So you see all the time, they take carbohydrates out and they either replace them with nothing or with protein, only protein, and they still steer clear from fat. And that's going to lead you down a bad road, right?
It's going to give you an unreal view of the diet too. I've had people say the diet doesn't work. I'm hungry all the time. I'm miserable.
Yep.
And what'd you eat for breakfast? I ate 3 egg whites. Well, that's not the diet.
No, it's not.
You know, it's actually more like 3 egg yolks. And you're not giving it a fair assessment, a fair chance then.
So high fat.
Eat more fat.
Low carb. Moderate to high protein.
Moderate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moderate.
Somewhere in there.
Absolutely.
And I've been working with some people lately, and they say I'm hungry, and I say eat, and it's very hard sometimes to wrap their mind around that right away. It's like all these weight loss approaches, right? Think we should be hungry, right? We think hunger equals weight loss, and that's not always the case.
Just equals being miserable,
being tired, and having
no energy to work out,
and it equals yo-yoing, right?
Yep.
Because you can't. That's the trouble, right? You can lose short-term weight that way, right?
You can.
Would you agree with that? You can be miserable and lose short-term weight that way. But what that's always going to perpetuate is that binge, right? Then the yo-yo goes back up. And then that's these studies that you see when people go on these diets and then they end up 5 to 10 pounds heavier than they ever were because they just fall off the deep end and binge it up. And then all of a sudden they go on another diet, right? And then their body crashes again and then they binge it out again.
Poor adherence rates.
Yeah.
This is well documented.
Yeah.
Low calorie, it's not working.
Yeah. Cool. Exercise. Right. What do you got?
My exercise takeaway, foam rolling. For those of you that don't know it, Google it. I'll put a link on the website link. I actually recently tweeted this and put it on my Facebook as well. Foam rolling, I can't explain it well enough, you know, without a video here, but basically think about putting a foam roller on the ground and you just roll your muscles out, like a baker rolling dough that we're obviously not going to eat. Because it's going to make you crazy. But think of a roller just rolling your muscles out. And what this does is it's myofascial release. It's like a way of stretching. I do it after I work out. It feels amazing. It breaks the lactic acid up, gets it out of there. And the big worry with this was they thought it would actually make your muscles weaker. Recent study showed that that's not the case. It's great stuff. I had a lot of IT band tension, a lot of pain there. My brother's been crazy about foam rolling for years and years. He got me on it, and it just, the pain is gone. It is amazing. Nice. The weights went up a lot. It's a lifesaver. And Google foam rolling. Look at my site. Roger and I'll put a link up. It is a life changing thing. So that's my takeaway. What do you got for us?
That's great, man. We have one at the gym. So
most gyms have them. Yep. I mean, my hospital gym.
Sometimes you might have to ask. I know the big box gym that I worked in some years ago. They had one, but it was tucked away in some sort of a trunk. So maybe just ask a...
Covered in dust.
Exactly. Ask a trainer. I'm sure they can help you pop one out. I'd be surprised if there wasn't one floating around somewhere.
It's a life changer. Get to it. What do you got for us?
Theme of the day for me and exercise is go with it. So episode 1, I think you'll remember me saying, hey, in the middle of a transformation program, the stress is usually running a little bit higher than normal. I have a little bit higher client load than normal. Spending some hours on the back end, you know, working with people over email and stuff like that. And if the stress is running high, I like to pull the workouts back. I liken stress to a cup, and all stressors sort of dumping into that cup. So when the business stress and that goes up, I pull back on the exercise stress because exercise is a stressor. However, on Saturday, I was feeling spry, like back to my old self, you know, like Kobe Bryant. Digging into the fountain of youth.
All right.
So anyway, I felt great. I was throwing around some weights in circuit form. I was doing about 3 or 4 exercise at a time circuits. And at the end, I was juiced, man. Not literally, but I was juiced up, and I had some more left, and I went with it. And I did a closer of bear crawl into treadmill push sprint several times through, and blew it out and felt great for it. Kind of, I needed at that moment to be on my back on the floor seeing the white buffalo in the sky. You know, that was just what I needed at that point in time. But I was ready for it. I responded to my body. I saw the white buffalo for a brief moment, and then it was gone. And then I felt good. you know? And so that's, again, the takeaway to build on episode one. Go with it. Listen to your body. If you're in a stressful time, pull your workouts back. But if your body starts to tell you, hey, I got it today, right? Go for it.
Yeah.
Right. There are days for milestones and then there are days to avoid milestones. And I think the art of it all is figuring out what day today is.
I like it.
Cool.
On that note, first off to the listener, Roger is not juicing.
No, absolutely.
He meant he was juiced.
I am juicing with the Vitamix.
The Vitamix again. But and actually, Roger's not
actually, wait,
sponsored.
Wait. So that means I was juiced that day.
You were. There you go. That's
just
a secret.
Just with vegetables and fruit.
We'll look into this. We will report back to you guys in episode 3. So finally here, closing out, we have some new little dialogue we're going to end with. And it's going to be Relentless Report. And Caveman Corner. Cheesy, but good.
Cheesy, but effective.
We'll see.
Man.
If you don't send me an email, tell me they're terrible. We'll change it up.
I think we're going to be getting some emails.
We listen to you guys. We're here for you.
That's right.
My closing is I recently heard.
We have to have some sort of sound bite here. I'm sure this will come in future weeks. Some sort of Caveman Corner.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll get
club.
Maybe when you're juicing. whatever noises you make when you're juicing, we'll throw those in.
So Colin in the Caveman Corner, here we go.
So my big thing, Dr. Westman down at Duke, he's run some studies. He's a big low-carb guy. I've heard him speak a couple times. Really, really nice guy, really smart, well-thought-out guy. And he has this great thing he does. When med students come and they rotate with him, he asks them how much sugar is circulating in your blood at any second. And, you know, they get out the calculator, you have 100 deciliters per milliliter, or 100 milligrams per deciliter. You have 5.6 liters, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it comes out to a spoonful, about 5 grams. And at our Ancestral Health 215 on Friday night, we were kind of arguing about how much sugar you need. And, you know, I brought that up to everyone. And think about, so 5 grams in your blood at any given time, a spoonful, and then you eat a piece of cake, not even a piece of cake, you eat a bowl of oatmeal.
A can of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, a can of Coca-Cola. But even these foods that we're told are so healthy, like oatmeal, one serving, you're getting, you know, 60 grams in. Where is that going? They always say it's going into your cells. It's going to give you energy. It's not going to give you 60 grams worth of carbohydrate energy. What's going to happen is it's going to hit your liver. It's going to be a burden on your liver. Your liver is going to turn into triglyceride, and it's going to get stored into fat. Keep that in mind. My takeaway here is, at any given time in your blood sugar, there is 5 grams of carbohydrates. So just keep that in mind and think about what our body actually needs to run on and needs to get fuel from. And it's just not carbohydrates. And, you know, we're getting long-winded here. So we'll talk about this again in the future. I'll get into the physiology about it, but that's my big takeaway point here.
I like it. I like it a lot. All right. The Relentless Report is as follows. If you are struggling with your physique and or you have big physique goals, I want you to do something today. I want you to do what I call an inputs analysis on your life as is, because I believe firmly that inputs equal output. All right. So I want you to look at your consumption, food and drink. Obviously, we talk about that here. That's pretty much our go-to topic, right? So I'm not saying anything new there, but I want you to look beyond that. I want you to look at the people that surround you, your family, your friends, your peers, the people that you're interacting with on a daily basis and their level of support for what you want to do. I want you to look at media streams. I want you to look at TV, movies, books, magazines, podcasts, right? What are you listening to? What are you watching? And what is that doing for you? What is that doing for your mindset? What is that contributing or not contributing to the results you want? And then I want you to look at your environment. I want you to look around at home, at work, at often trafficked stores, at your outdoor environment or lack of an outdoor environment. I want you to look at all that and throw it in a bucket and see if you can pinpoint between 1 in 3 inputs that you can effectively change. And that might be altering your food. That might be going to a friend who's always giving you crap about eating a healthy lunch, and maybe you need to have a conversation with them and say, hey, I would like your support here. You know, maybe it's maybe you've been recently watching a whole lot of the Food Network, you know, Cake Wars or something like that, and it's causing you to binge eat cake on a Saturday night. So take a look at those inputs, 1 to 3 that you can change for the better, And I bet you it'll go a long way.
I like it. You got philosophical this week.
Absolutely, man.
I didn't know you were going that route.
I am one quarter philosophical.
Keeping me on my toes here. No, that's great points. And absolutely, really analyze what you're doing out there. Make some sense of it. I know I have to do it quite often.
Yeah.
Too often.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you think of an input?
Can I think of an input?
I'm putting you on the spot, man.
You are putting me on the spot. I mean, I work in a hospital. I preach a high-fat diet. I have people nonstop coming at me. So I have to really analyze what I'm saying, what I'm doing, you know, every single day. And I have to have something to back it up.
Yeah.
So it's good though. It keeps me on my toes. And, you know, I don't think you're any different as, you know, you're with Relentless Gym, Relentless Fitness, you're in the spotlight too.
All the time. Like, yeah, absolutely. All the time. All right, man. So, hey, another successful episode, I would say, in the bag.
It's been a good one. Of note, Roger's not juicing and he follows all copyright laws. Just, we have that in the books.
That's right.
It's official.
Yes. So sorry, CJ. But we're coming after you, man. We're going to get you in Philly.
We're getting you here.
That's right.
So, we guarantee it. We're guaranteeing it.
Wow.
It's like a
first podcast guarantee.
It's like winning the Super Bowl. We're going to Joe Namath it. He got it right. We're guaranteeing it.
All right. So that link is up. You know, if you're a local to Philly and want to join us at In Search of the Perfect Human Diet, legally, please like the page and let's drum up some serious interest here. So Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 2 coming to an end here. Please come give us some more feedback. We will be continuously morphing the show for your benefit. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. And we will flip some stuff around. You can go interact with Colin on cavemandoctor.com. He'll have the podcast up there. Drop him a comment. You can interact with me on rogerdickerman.com. Same thing. Drop me a comment. And we will see you next week.
See you next week. Keep pushing for good health.
That's right.